Melissa Azarek is writing from the research she's done in school systems around the country in the journal District Administration when she tells us, it doesn't take long for a student to learn one form or another of the game Sink the Sub. Nancy Haas of Arizona State University remembers well the day her grandson TJ, then in first grade, got all bright-eyed and announced, we're going to have a sub tomorrow. When she asked him what that meant, he replied, you get to do whatever you want and you don't have to listen. The object of the game is, of course, quite the opposite for substitute teachers. As Sandra Nelson, a sub for the past 7 years in Aldine, Texas, knows, not even experience exempts you from the occasional classroom management catastrophe. This spring, Nelson found herself in the middle of a student uproar soon after a school-wide Cinco de Mayo celebration. Getting second graders back on task is no easy feat when you're competing with a mariachi band parading past the window. With a quick glance at some captivate and redirect techniques from her substitute teaching guidebook, Nelson survived that round. For many districts, the substitute teaching game is an early morning rush for classroom coverage that day. End of story. But savvy administrators know a true win requires a big picture objective, making sure that subs are not only present, but that they are prepared to continue the learning process. We can't just send a babysitter into the classroom. These folks have got to be ready to step up to the plate, says Linda Coffey, the substitute program's personnel specialist for Fulton County, Georgia schools. That's why the district has, for the past 15 years, required that subs go through a training day. Ah, but we're about to meet teachers and administrators and students in a school where they haven't yet heeded that advice. And wouldn't you know it, one of their veteran teachers simply had to call in sick. She's someone who wouldn't have done so unless it was absolutely necessary. But David Parmalee, who's been a teacher himself, realized this was the perfect premise, and that, as he puts it, comedy ensues. His middle grade chapter book, Miss Fiesen Schneesen is Ill, was just issued by Sunbury Press, and will have a lively launch 1 week from this evening at Kiss Theater in Wilkes-Barre, with young actors creating this world of classroom antics, curiosity, and even some learning along the way. David Parmalee is an actor, director, and playwright who is general manager of Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre. His first book is titled The Sea is a Thief, published by Sunbury Press in 2013. It's an historical novel set on Chincoteague Island during the Civil War. David Parmalee paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about his writing life and to introduce us to Miss Fiesen Schneesen and company.
The first book was historical fiction, and it was a safe way to discover whether or not I was a writer, because I didn't know. And we outlined the book in 2008, my daughters and I, while driving to vacation. And the book is set in Chincoteague, which is where we were going. And I thought, I'd like to try to write a novel. I don't know how people do it. How do you write 200, 300, 400 pages, 1,000 pages? I think I'll try. But I had no idea whether it was any good. And of course, we don't want to do things like that because we're afraid they'll be dumb or bad. So I didn't know. And I finished it and sent it to someone I respected who was very nice. And I knew she would let me down easily if it was terrible. But she said, no, it's good. And we ended up publishing it. But the great thing about historical fiction is there are rules. You don't say, what's my idea? Is it a good idea? Is this a fun thing? Is this an interesting thing? If you're writing about something that actually happened, you must work within those parameters. Then you take off from there. With children's books, no rules. You've got to have something that's fun, that's amusing, that hopefully has a lesson, and that will keep the attention of a young reader whose mind is going a mile a minute. So it's an entirely different challenge.
And the lovely story that you tell about the genesis of the book has to do with your own daughter.
It does. And so long ago, when she was in fourth grade, she's 21 now. She's a senior. She's studying film and production design in Philadelphia, just doing a wonderful job. But when she was in fourth grade and she was getting ready for school, we have four children, so they were all at home at the time. For some reason, and I don't know why, I would sit at the computer and Google cartoon teacher. And I'd come up with these little cartoon teachers, and the sillier the better, and write a tiny little vignette about what was happening that day with her new substitute teacher. The thread was her teacher was out, and she had an increasingly colorful series of substitutes each day. And I'd fold them up and put them in her lunchbox to give her a laugh at school. Well, a few years ago, I found these things, and she was there. And I said, you know, these are kind of funny. There might actually be a book in these. And she said, Dad, it sounds like there might. And these were literally six little vignettes, a paragraph each. The timestamp was on them, you know, 7:45 in the morning in 2004. And I sat down, and a year later, as time goes by, we had a book.
And you had already a kind of through line in that you had a scenario.
Yes, yes. There's a tough class. You may have been part of a tough class, or you may have heard teachers saying in the hallway, oh, that's a tough class. When you have a tough class, some teachers can handle them, some become frustrated. Well, this class has a very diminutive, very kind, very soft-spoken teacher who nonetheless knows how to deal with them. Well, one day she calls in sick with a cold and a touch of bronchitis. This is the backstory. Through a whirlwind tour of the United States medical system, she keeps getting referred to increasingly more specialized physicians, and she ends up being out all week. Well, of course, no teacher can substitute for this class more than a day. They don't last. So the poor principal, Principal Armstrong, is forced to recruit increasingly absurd and colorful substitutes until Miss Fiesen-Schneezen returns.
And tell us about that name. Was that right from the start?
Just popped right out. Yep, all of it did. It was amazing. As I fleshed it out and began to make it real and add detail, there's a lot of things in there from my own brief teaching career and other things that I love. But it started with absurdity and fun, and why not?
You can take them to Mars and so forth and have something out there, but this is the world they know. They're in it.
This is their world, exactly. People began to ask me, what's the message? And I hadn't written it with a message. I just wrote it because I was drawn to the sequence of events and the things I like. But I began to think about it, and I realized, because we all remember grade school. Grade school, those years, is when we figure out who we are. We're stepping into our shoes and seeing where they take us. And that's the work of children, is the play and the exploration and the growing. And we're in our own little minds, turning slowly into adults in a world that's run by adults who unfortunately have, for the most part, forgotten that process. And here they are trying to run that world full of kids who are going through that process. And the two collide in very comical ways sometimes. Of course, the best teachers remember that process, and they have that empathy for what the kids are going through. I think they're operating at a much higher level than we realize. Kids are thinking things that would shock us.
Introduce us to one of these increasingly...
Yes, colorful substitutes. Well, the first person we bring in is a Belgian math professor from Belgium, and he's from Gladiola State University, the local college. But of course, he teaches at way too high a level, so he focuses on triangles and spends time teaching the kids about triangles until they get him distracted. You know how kids do? And he ends up speaking about the wonders of Belgium, bicycle racing and the pommes frites and the marvelous cheeses and the hams and the fishes, until finally he books a flight to Belgium and goes away. He goes back to his home country and will not return. Professor Van Fuselage.
And you love bicycle racing, so yes. You've got it in there.
Well, we got Eddie Merckx in there. Eddie Merckx, the finest bicycle racer of all time, is featured prominently in the book.
That's a detail they might not know, but now they'll recognize it when he's flashed on the screen.
Exactly.
All right, we've got that.
Well, of course, he can't return. So the principal searches for others, and he finds a teacher from the African Continental Teacher Exchange Program, ACTEP, Mr. Kofi Bonchaka, who's a hydro engineer. His specialty is clean water. Well, of course, this can't hold the attention of the kids very long. So he ends up, just to keep them occupied, teaching them traditional Ghanaian dance, using the wastebaskets as djembe drums, and taking little bits of chalk and rattling them in cups. But it completely exhausts him, so he's not coming back either.
We have this wonderful image of a wise owl who sees it all and knows it all. Who's this?
Oh, my illustrator, Maria de Cerce. What a magician with the pen. She is just phenomenal. The final day, we have Maurice Bunt from the Rosalie Quill Avian Education Center, a couple of counties to the south. And I won't mention their name, but we know where that probably is. We know what that's actually modeled on. And Maurice brings two teachers, our feathered friends, that we can learn from, the great horned owl and a penguin named Roald, and it came from a little cartoon of a penguin wearing a mortarboard and holding a pointer that I had found online, but it turned into an actual penguin.
There's the penguin, right?
Mm-hmm. There is Roald, and no one can draw these characters like Maria. They're just charming.
Tell us who she is and how you got together.
Maria is a design graduate from Savannah College of Art and Design. She's working and living in L.A., has a tremendous interest in animals, and that's her profession. She's also a designer. And I actually became a SCAD employer. Savannah College of Art and Design has a website where you advertise for people who have those skills, and they respond, and you look at their portfolio. And as soon as I saw the kind of work she had done, I said, oh my gosh, this woman's sense of humor matches mine. And sure enough, phenomenal work.
Did you meet? Were you across?
We have never met. We hope we will. But so far, it is entirely digital, as these things tend to be today.
Now tell us about the publishing process. So you put this together, you worked with her, and what happened?
Well, we had the manuscript, we had the illustrations, most of them. And this is one nice thing about having published a book, even though it may not be entirely related to the book you're working on now, you know a publisher. So I communicated with Lawrence Noor down at Sunbury Press in Mechanicsburg. He's a good-sized publisher now. He's got several hundred titles out and 30 or 40 kids' books. Asked him if he'd want to look at it, and he did, and the rest is history. And I'm so grateful to him for publishing the book.
It's out now?
The book is just out. It came out a week ago. We opened the first box at the Back Mountain Library luncheon. And available on Amazon or at the Sunbury Press store directly.
And you're going to be out in the community to do a launch.
Yes, yes, the best book launch of all, a live reading at KISS Theater May 12th, the evening of Friday, May 12th. There are 38 characters in this book, including the penguin. And we've got KISS kids, who are some of the finest actors you could imagine, and local adults from community theater assembling to read the book live beginning to end. What more fun can we have than actually have them read the book? The narrator reads so much of it, and I'm careful not to identify in the book the gender of the narrator. Is it a young man? Is it a young woman? Because I would like everyone who reads it to be able to identify. Of course, writing from a male point of view, you cannot avoid that, but I took great pains not to let it slip. But we have Jess Suda, who's artistic director at KISS, reading our narrator. So it'll be a woman this time, at least. And a whole assortment of kids picking up on the various voices in the book.
Will you read something for us?
Oh, yes, positively. I thought maybe Professor von Fuselage. Now, Principal Armstrong, who has to deal with all these issues. By the way, while these teachers are coming in, the State Board of Review is auditing his school. And if he doesn't get adequate performance, it's all over. That's the highest accolade you can get. Adequate performance. So he brings in Professor von Fuselage. You should expect the professor very shortly, and I ask you to be most respectful. Suddenly we heard a hearty laugh and the sound of footsteps in the hallway. A woman's voice called out to Principal Armstrong. It was Mrs. Feist from the main office. The principal left the doorway for a second, returning with a smile on his face. Class, he announced, it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. von Fuselage from the mathematics department at Gladiolus State University. He stood aside to reveal a short, round man with a great deal of white hair combed straight back from his forehead. He wore tortoiseshell glasses, a dark gray vest speckled with white, and a striped bow tie that sat tilted on his shirt collar. Good morning, he bellowed, extending his arms as if to hug us. We laughed out loud. The professor raised his eyebrows. I do not make any joke, yet we are all laughing, he said. We have a good start. Yes, I will leave you to your students, said Principal Armstrong, quickly heading back to the main office with Mrs. Feist. We could see him check his watch. The mathematics, then, announced Dr. von Fuselage, reaching for a marker with one hand and a pointer with the other. For your grade level, it is perhaps best to begin with the triangle. He made three big lines on the board, forming a triangle in the shape of a spear. Who can tell me what particular type of a triangle is this? And so it continued well into the long, long morning. Dr. Fuselage taught us about triangles and their colorful history, and also some fun things about the rest of mathematics. I made notes in case there was a test. You never know. Bathtubs were important in ancient Greek math. The cleaner you were, the better you could add. Some triangles are right triangles. The rest might be mistakes. No one can spell the word isosceles right, unless I spelled it right that time. but I wouldn't count on it. The smaller rocks are, the less space a ton of them takes up. If you add up all the angles in a triangle, there are still only three, and you are only halfway to 360, which is the most that angles can add up to. When it was nearly lunch, Mrs. Feist brought us a message that the State Board of Review had asked all the teachers to read to their classes. It was an anti-drug message. We had heard it a bunch of times. We were all sure that if the time ever came when we were interested in taking drugs, we wouldn't. Dr. Van Fuselage read it aloud very carefully with some pronunciations we had never heard. It was far more interesting than usual. Then he returned to his lesson. I made a note. Triangles are cool. Drugs are not.
Thanks.
When my daughter was probably six, she entered a t-shirt coloring contest for a local anti-drug agency. And she had no idea what the competition was about, but they were going to Red Baron Stadium and get some kind of awards. So she took her t-shirt and promptly made different colored triangles all over it. And we stood there looking at this t-shirt thinking, how will we enter this in the anti-drug contest? And my son Benjamin, who's now 32, said, easy, Dad. Triangles are cool. Drugs are not. And she won the competition. It's all random stuff that sticks in your brain, isn't it?
Well, we heard you do accents, and there are 38 characters and all of this. Theater is so much a part of your life. Is this something you might bring to the stage?
It could certainly be done. It could be done, and I would love to see it done. We'll see how the live reading goes. But I think anything set in a school has potential for marvelous mayhem. Comedy ensues whenever we're in a school, so who knows?
And you've already read Out of School.
Yes, we read at Wilkes-Barre Academy, marvelous children. All the third and fourth graders are writing books, and half the first and second graders are, is what I found out. So they're doing a lot of writing there, and it was just a great day.
How do you get folks to see these wonderful characters?
Yes, some of them are, they're not reproduced in color, other than the cover art. It was, of course, in a paperback. There's only so much room for color. But we're making giant projections of them so that people can see Maria de Cerce's work as it progressed from the sketch stage through black and white, and some of them to the finished color illustrations, which are just a delight.
When we talk about the various age levels that this appeals to, were you thinking when you were working on this book that this would be good for fourth grade?
This is a tough thing with kids. I taught seventh and eighth grade, and I've taught eighth grade for many, many years on Sundays, CCD at my parish. So I know the junior high kid pretty well, I think, as well as you can. But when you decide, where do I target it? Where's the voice? What would a young person find funny? What would confuse them? What would they be able to understand? Where's the vocabulary? Those were difficult choices. So I guessed, and I hope I guessed well. But I think one thing you don't want to do is dumb it down. I would rather write a book for smart kids who love to read and have their own opinion about school and have them find it funny rather than just another book which was written on purpose to appeal to a certain set of standards that we have decided are good for grade school. So maybe not everybody gets it, but I hope the kids who do get it say, finally, somebody wrote a book for me. So that was my goal.
What does your daughter say now?
Oh, she's enjoying it very, very much. She and her sister said to each other, we'll have this forever. And it was one of the nicest things that they could possibly have said.
You love music. You're very musical, and you include it in your productions integrally, often when you're doing theater work.
Well, for that, I give 100% credit to my wife. She is the musician in the family. We directed a play back in 1982 when we were teaching 7th and 8th grade, featuring rhythm band, the Javanese gamelan orchestra, marimba, xylophone. Kids can do rhythm band. You know, it's not that hard to do. Most people can feel things moving in a certain way, and if you get 10 or 20 of them together and they all support each other, it goes even better. So I remembered that experience when I thought of Kofi Bonchaka.
So again, as you say, you're just reaching in here and there into the storehouse of our minds and
yes.
Our memories.
And another analogy that I thought of when speaking to the library, I had to prepare a presentation on it. And I've thought of this so many times, the game that the Dadaists played called The Exquisite Corpse, where you would tear up a newspaper article, put the adjectives in one mug, the verbs in another, the nouns in another, and then you would pull them out to complete a sentence. It was sort of like Mad Libs on absinthe. And they would do this together, very intellectual people. And the first sentence they formed was, "The exquisite corpse shall drink the new wine." And hence Duchamp and people like that, Henri Breton, named the game The Exquisite Corpse. But the most wonderful thing was what Breton said about it. He said, "When you have chosen the words at random and glued them down, the poem you write will be beautiful and resemble you." So we all have a storehouse of experiences, of knowledge, of things we happen to have seen that struck us and stayed with us. And when we write fiction and can go anywhere we like, we go to things we know. And that marvelous randomness comes together to form some kind of a pattern that we hope is beautiful, but we cannot help that it will resemble us.
Now, what about this woman whose face never appears in full?
Miss Hedvig Helsen. Yeah, Miss Hedvig Helsen is retired from the Women's Correctional Institution, which the kids don't know what that is until somebody explains to them that was a prison. And the people incarcerated there were mainly illiterate, so she decided she would teach them English. And her motto was, learn a long sentence during your long sentence. So when they cannot find anyone else to substitute, she's pretty much near the end. She's the fourth of five. They entice Miss Hedvig Helsen to come, and she handles the class beautifully. There's not a peep out of them. In fact, the principal thinks they've gone down to the sports field because they're so quiet, but it's because she's intimidated them all into silence. She makes them stand in the corner, and then in what she calls the cloakroom, and then Maria drew this in, she puts a sign on the floor that says, "Floor of Shame." So while she is successful, the principal decides it's just too much trauma, and he tells her it is not a good fit for our school, which he's lying so he doesn't have to say something even worse. So she ends up being replaced by the penguin.
Maria has made the decision not to show the...
Yes, we never see Miss Hedvig Helsen's face. She's kind of the Darth Vader of Miss Fiesenschneezen is ill.
But Miss Fiesenschneezen lives to teach another day.
She does. Well, she only has a cold with a touch of bronchitis, which she used to get all the time as a child back in Sullivan County. She ends up at a university teaching hospital where she meets with the four pulmonologists, Dr. Einblick, Dr. Schmetterling, Dr. Papillon, and Dr. Farfalla, but is treated by a wonderful Chinese man, Dr. Lao Mingzhi, who's an herbalist, who left China in 1967 with nothing but a copy of Mao's Little Red Book and his satchel full of herbs. He placed the Little Red Book in the wastebasket, set up his herbs, and began to practice herbal medicine. And the pulmonologists call him in when they don't know what to do, and he prescribes eucalyptus, cinnamon, and honey, and he sends her home with that.
Now, has this given you the impulse to say, ooh, this is fun, I want to do more?
Oh, it's so much fun. The next book is about half finished. It's Miss Fiesenschneezen is Fit. Principal Armstrong, who has to chase down one of the substitutes who physically flees the building, he has to chase and bring him back, realizes he's out of shape. So as people sometimes do, he gets the fitness bug while he's away at a conference and decides that the school must participate in the president's physical fitness challenge, which most of us remember from school and hated. So Mr. Fulcrum, the gym teacher, also a trombone player, has to prepare the kids, but he knows they're really not ready for anything this rigorous. So he ends up bringing in a series of, you see the pattern here, a series of fitness specialists to get them ready for the challenge.
With Maria in the wings, it's going to be wonderful. David.
Wait till she sees that she has to draw an 88-year-old Indian woman who still practices yoga, who is one of our characters.
So we'll see you there on the 12th. Anything beyond that planned in terms of readings or signing?
Yes, indeed. I'm working with the Hoyt Library, with the Oosterhout Library. We did readings of the first book at the Oosterhout and had a great time. So they all have children's days, of course, and we want to get in front of as many kids as we possibly can.
Writer David Parmelee, actor, director, and playwright, who is general manager of the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre. His first book is titled The Sea is a Thief, published by Sunbury Press in 2013, and he's just introduced us to his middle grade chapter book, Miss Fiesenschneezen is Ill, and that was issued just a week ago by Sunbury Press. And there will be a lively launch, and that's a live onstage reading of Miss Fiesenschneezen is Ill, and it will be at KISS Theater with the KISS Theater Ensemble and members of the community bringing 38 characters, including the penguin, to life. And it's Friday, May 12th at 7 in the evening at KISS Theater, 400 East End Center in Wilkes-Barre Township, just off Kidder Street. Admission is free. For more information on the web, sunburypress.com, sunburypress.com. And that's about Miss Fiesen Schneesen is ill. And Fiesen Schneesen is spelled F-E-E-S-E-N-S-C-H-N-E-E-Z-E-N. Miss Fiesen Schneesen is ill. It's by David Parmelee, P-A-R-M-E-L-E-E. And you can see a live onstage reading, the book launch, Friday, May 12th at 7 in the evening at KISS Theater, 400 East End Center in Wilkes-Barre Township, just off Kidder Street. It's a cast of local stars and KISS kids, and admission is free.